You are listening to the Winning Edge podcast, where each week we have a conversation with a different member of the Winning Edge Business Networking Chapter located in Spring Hill, Florida.
Welcome to this episode of the Winning Edge podcast. I am your host, typically Chris Chambers for this podcast. However, today I am joined, per usual actually, with Mr. Andrew Chamberlain of Jericho Road Ministries. And Andrew, you want to discuss something from one of the Jim Collins books, Good to Great, is that right?
Yeah, so when you did the interview of me and you asked the book question, you know, this was the book I referenced, if I'm not mistaken, Good to Great. This has been a very impactful book in my life. I've actually had the privilege of hearing Jim speak about this book, and it's great. So again, that book is Good to Great, written by Jim Collins. And for everybody in our chapter, I'd highly recommend it. It's a great, great resource. I don't think you can go wrong. Obviously going to talk about.
Yeah, no, I was just going to mention, that book, basically what they did, it's you know, several years, I think up to 9 years or so of research that they did in putting the book together. They looked at businesses. They were basically, he had written another book called Built to Last. And this was kind of a prequel to that book, in that, somebody had asked him one time, you know, about Built to Last, hey, that's great. These companies were already great, but how do you go from good to great? You know, how do you get there? And he said, that's a good question. Let's do some research and see if we can't figure that out. So what they did is they, you know, used the stock exchange, and they used businesses that were able to, over a 15-year period, able to stay above your return that you would get typically in the stock exchange. And so these businesses, 15 businesses that they used, and then what they did is they would compare them to other businesses that either never got there in that 15-year period, or there were some businesses like GE that got there and then fell back down. And so they weren't able to sustain that. So that's kind of where these business principles came from. And that's what I really thought was super interesting about the book. It's not just kind of theory out there as to, hey, this might work or that might work, or for me it worked, not just anecdotal, but actually it looked at, you know, business over an extended period of time to come up with these principles that were seen in each one of these businesses. So super interesting. Definitely a good book, man. Good read.
Yeah. You hit on that one part, and I won't spend too much time there, but the research over time, I mean, was so impactful to me, because this was not a fly by the night kind of book. This took years to put together, and so it's very impactful. So obviously we won't talk about all of the book. That would take an enormous amount of time, but we will talk about one thing today, and that's this idea of the hedgehog concept. And so if you think visually for a moment, if you're hearing this and you're thinking visually, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no, just again, before we jump into kind of the circles of the hedgehog principle, I think it's interesting to see kind of where this whole idea came from. And a physical hedgehog, it's a hedgehog and like the fox. And so the idea of the fox being very sly, right, very wily, a fox is always looking for ways to kind of be sneaky and sneak up on their prey and things like that. So a fox has 1,000 different ways that they can ultimately hunt their prey. Whereas a hedgehog didn't. A hedgehog doesn't have that. In fact, the hedgehog has essentially one thing that it does really, really well. And that's why the fox, even though it has 1,000 ways to attack the hedgehog, it never could overcome the hedgehog, because this hedgehog was really, really good at one thing. And of course, that was balling up and defending itself. And so that's where this idea of a hedgehog came from to begin with. So anyhow, go ahead, Andrew.
No, I'm glad you shared that. Yeah, because it's that whole idea of that circle, you know. Yeah. That's where we'll begin to this. So you got if you think of this visually for a moment, we got three circles, and they're overlapping, concentric or overlapping circles. And so you put one at the top, put one on the side, one on the other side, and that overlapping part, that's kind of the part you want to focus on. But there's three parts to make this up. What are you deeply passionate about? What can you be the best in the world at, and what drives your economic engine? So how can you make money doing this? So that overlapping element is the part that you really want to focus on. So Chris, before we kind of flesh that out between you and I, you do a great job of talking about like the background. What is there any part that I missed there in the explanation of that, so that we can everybody hearing can make sure we are on the same page.
No, that's exactly right. Again, kind of a Venn diagram, you know, three circles, Venn diagram, that part in the middle is really what we're you know, you're focused on. So it's important that you're not looking at, you don't meet simply two of those three, but you meet absolutely all three of these. You know, another quote here from the book, he says, which I'll go ahead and bring in now. He says this, this brings me to one of the most crucial points of this chapter. A hedgehog concept is not a goal to be the best. It's not a strategy to be the best. It's not an intention to be the best. It's not a plan to be the best. It is an understanding of what you can be the best at. And he said that distinction is absolutely crucial. So again, it's not simply, oh, I think I can be good at that, or I hope to be good at that, or I'm going to strive to be good at that. No. What in your business, right? Whatever that business is, what is it that you do extremely well, right? Better than most. And that's kind of the idea of the hedgehog principle when it comes to what you can be the best in the world at. So I'll leave it off there, Andrew.
All right. So as we're thinking through this, then just one more kind of behind the scene point prior to before we kind of flesh it out a little bit from the research side. And this is a direct reference to the book, Good to Great. And if you have a copy of that book, page 94 is a place that I'm looking at right now. One of the companies that they researched that really exemplified this was Walgreens. And it's just really interesting here. Want to read this one little part and then we'll move on from here. It says, and again, this is on page 94. Okay, so we're talking just about good strategy versus bad strategy. The team sat there for a minute thinking, then Lee Wilbanks observed, but what I find so striking is their incredible simplicity. I mean, look at Kroger with the superstore concept, Kimberly Clark, the move to paper-based consumer products, or Walgreens with convenient drugstores. These are simple, simple, simple ideas. And again, it's just, as you said, it's that honing in, you know, that it's not, I think you use that term, it's not just a goal, it's like finding out who you really are. Is that an accurate way of what you said there?
Absolutely.
All right, so cool. All right, so again, a Venn diagram, you're looking at these three circles. There's the top one there. What are you deeply passionate about? So let's talk about that a little bit, because passion is a little bit of a fickle word, you know, and we want to make sure that we are, you know, have some parameters of what that means versus what that doesn't mean. Mm-hmm. So as an example, you know, I could say, hey, I'm passionate about some kind of hobby or something, but I got to be careful because I got to look at, there's other two things that I got to kind of filter that through. What can I be the best in the world at versus what can I make some money at? So, you know, I'm passionate about singing, but good luck. You know what I mean? So how should we flesh that out from a passionate side?
Yeah, I mean, what is it that gets you up, you know, day in and day out? You know, what is it that, you know, you can go to bed kind of thinking about, you can wake up kind of thinking about, what is it that can drive you? And like you said, man, you know, I can have a goal right now, again, like you said, to be a, you know, we use the term rock star in BNI, but I could strive to be a literal rock star. The problem is I don't have the voice, right, or the talent to be able to do that. So I could, my goal could be, I'm going to be the best in the world at that. But again, if I don't physically have the tools that's going to allow me to do that, we're gonna have a problem. So I could be as passionate about singing and becoming a rock star as I want to be, but if I don't have those other two in place, it's not going to matter. So again, part of this hedgehog principle, I think, is certainly understanding your strengths and understanding your weaknesses. This is individually, right, but also as a business, right? I think both of those things are important. And as you're building culture, and we've had this conversation, I think it was Chris Smith that we had the conversation of culture a few weeks ago. And again, if we, as we are building this business, if you use this kind of hedgehog principle, what you do is you bring in individuals who are going to fit. All right. And the way that Jim Collins used that in this book is he says, you know, you want to get the right people on the bus, right? And then make sure that everybody's on the in the right seats. And so if you're doing that and everybody's aligned in their passion for what you're doing day in and day out, then you're going to be good to go. I'll give you an example here, kind of anecdotal from my business. One of the things that we get to do here is help veterans, right, get the benefits they deserve, right, for their service to our country. And one of the things that we absolutely love to do is make phone calls to our veteran clients who have been waiting sometimes years and years and years, and they come to us and finally we're able to get them over the hump and let them know, hey, you know, you're going to be getting, you know, over $3,100 a month or $3,500 a month or whatever it is, you know, a significant annual raise, monthly raise that they're going to be getting. Again, sometimes significant amount of pass-through benefits. And we love to have those conversations. We have them week in, week out. And one of the things that we do, I know my wife will make these phone calls sometimes, loves doing that. We'll have other staff that does that, Angela. And again, just absolutely loves, love to do that. Again, that not only do we have passion to do that, but by kind of sharing in that experience, we're able to, it actually continues to refuel that passion, you know, day in and day out. So that would be my kind of piece on passion.
Yeah, that's a good one. Mine for me was it took time, and I'm sure yours took time to figure out as well. But I just remember having an experience where I got to serve people that the way I determined at that time was other people didn't think about. And I remember how the passion that I felt like, man, I love taking care of and helping people that most of the people in this world forget about. Mm-hmm. And when I found that passion, then I felt like I was on a continual drive to figure out the best way to do that. And so what's interesting then is it took time. It took time through a couple different other ventures to realize the best way I could probably do that, the absolute best way to fulfill that passion is to work in a homeless shelter. Absolute best way. Because here you got people that are maybe abandoned by family. Maybe society's abandoned them because they have an issue. Maybe they're abandoned because they're so hurt from a situation. They want to abandon them. You know, they want to cut themselves out, so to speak, from the rest of society. And I'm like, what an opportunity. This is, you know, it's a very unique passion, you know, but it's okay, that's it. And so I remember I took a tour of a shelter in Northeast Ohio. And I remember after I took that tour, I was like, this is it. I've used that line, I don't know how many times, like, this is it, this is it, this is exactly it. And so I would encourage everybody to have that simple, you said, you know, we could deduce what you said, not that the other parts weren't important, but we could deduce it to, I love sharing with these men and women, here are the benefits you deserve, you know, here it is.
Yeah, and one other thing, you know, just kind of going along with what you had said, is that a lot of times, you know, our veterans, one of the things that is so hurtful to them in that they've been fighting for years and years and years is they get the sense that they served our country, right? And then the country that promised to take care of them in their time of need is refusing to take care of them. And so, you know, a lot of times it isn't that our government is doing that. Our government simply has set parameters. But unfortunately, our veterans, because there's not a whole lot of individuals out there, I think I've given the stat before, you know, 1.7 million attorneys in the country, something like that. And only about 19,000 actually help, you know, veterans or serving our veterans. So same thing as you were saying, not a whole lot of individuals are helping, you know, our veterans, you know, get these benefits. And so getting the opportunity to do that, there is some affirmation on their part when they finally get to the point or confirmation, I should say, yes, I do deserve these benefits, right? And I've even had, you know, veterans that tell me, you know, they feel like the government is saying they're calling them liars, and they even begin to start to internalize that. Well, maybe this didn't happen. Maybe I'm remembering something that wasn't there. And so when I get to help them, and again, get that confirmation for them that no, absolutely, thank you for what you did. Again, it's a beautiful thing. So,
yeah, that's wonderful. So for all those that are listening, you know, think of your life experiences, think of maybe some past jobs you have, maybe think of your current employment and ask yourself this question, regardless of how you are doing it right now, what is that thing you're really passionate about? And what I would say that 9 times out of 10 really is helping somebody in some way, you know, and maybe, you know, I'm not trying to, you know, make it sound like everybody has to go be in all the service oriented industries, but I'm saying, I think that is the bigger thing that's probably underneath the service. We hear it a lot in our BNI group, you know, people have different businesses, but they say at the end of the day, what it's really about is I want to help this person, or I want to see this thing accomplished for this person. And so I would really challenge everybody to find what that passion is. I think it may, you know, kind of manifest itself in a lot of different ways, but you probably have that one thing, two things, that kernel, that big thing there that's flowing out. Find that and then start working off of that. Second one I want to go to now is, what can you be best in the world at? Yeah. You know, I think you made a really good point. It's really good to have data. You talked about there's like only 19,000 lawyers or firms, or however you want to phrase that are working in this. That's an important thing. You know, that's an important thing to know. I know that in the network that I'm in, we have probably 200, 300 different types of missions that do the kind of work that we do. It's something very similar I learned, you know, like, okay, so I've got this passion. Now let's see what the landscape is of working in this. And then what skills do I need? Yeah. What fine tuning and pruning do I need so I can become the best at it? So I'll start and then I'll pass it on to you. I had that data. I knew what it was. And so I looked at two different things. I wanted to get, the way that I do my work is from a spiritual component as well. So I went and got a master's of divinity degree. I got 96, 93 grad hours working and to honing that spiritual side, counseling. I really wanted to focus on how to interact with people and hear from them and care for them. So I did a lot in that and from a degree standpoint. Then I went and got a master's of business administration because why? I knew that this type of work is going to have a large business component. And we'll get to that financial in a moment, but like, how do I really run this and make it, keep it in the black so that you can keep doing this work, because it's a hard financial component to do. So you have to then go, okay, what is that passion? What can I be the best in the world at? And then start, you got to build, you got to work, you got to keep honing in. And I knew if I could focus in on those two things in the field that I'm in, that I could be the best at it. I could really care for these individuals and I could really make an economic engine so it could do it. So flip that to you for a moment, maybe give a little antidote for yourself and then add, some more general principles that would help people understand it for where they are.
Yeah. And you and I, Andrew, several months ago had a conversation just about kind of specializing, right? And this component, this piece kind of comes to that point. But it goes deeper than that, in that it's not simply what do I want to do? It's what can I be the best in the world at, right? What is it that I can be the best in the world at? And again, like you said, there certainly is, you're passionate about it. Okay, I'm passionate about it. Again, as you said, there's not a whole lot of individuals. It's a market that is needing, right, other individuals in there to help, and you could fit in there. And then you got the proper training to allow you to do that. And for us, 2011 is when I started, assisting or helping veterans. I'd been doing some other things. And so, my father's a veteran and grandfather's a veterans. And so when I had the opportunity to start building that, I loved it. And here's the other thing I wanted to mention. It's not that, again, you or I, neither one of us, I don't believe, set out to do what we're doing and thinking, hey, hedgehog principle, right? This is how we're going to do it, But it is super interesting how following some of these things have proven to be successful, to work, to be true. And again, like you said, going back to that lot of data that kind of brought this up. And so, can it be used in that way? Absolutely. And again, I think that was the purpose of the book, was to show a business that's doing well, good, how to become great. And so, for us, that, deciding that we were going to help veterans and veterans alone, there's a lot of other areas that I could be practicing law, personal injury being one of them. But there's a lot of attorneys out there that practice personal injury law, right? The competition out there is steep. Could I get to the point where I'm the best at that? I don't know. But what I do know is I'm really good at what I do, and I'm passionate about what I do. So that's where my firm is right now. And that's where we're heading in the future.
Yeah. And I want to take this one other thing before we move on, cause you made a really good point there. It's not like you and I sought out like hedgehog principle. Let's do this. It's a growing learning experience, but once you're in that field, so let's assume for a moment for those listening that they've got that passion, let's assume they're in that. And now they're trying to hone that in. This keeps going back. I think there's two ways to look at this. Individually, how you keep honing yourself to be the best, that's kind of the first way I took it from the educational, the practical standpoint. I'll share one more there. I make it a practice every week to research another mission in this world, another mission that does something in our country. And so I spend a lot of time just researching them because you want to keep getting better, better, better. But let's now look at it. Let's assume that you're already in that position. One of the things that this book really focuses on is how these businesses as they were developing. They already had the passion in place. They kept honing it down even more and more and more, like, okay, this is our niche. And, you know, you and I've talked about that a lot. There's another podcast that you and I, another episode that we recorded where we hit that. But I just want to really encourage our listeners that once you're in that industry, you have to keep even honing it more and more and more. I'll give you one example. Today in our meeting, Sean Bradley was talking about the difference of a commercial realtor versus a residential realtor and how a business used a residential realtor. And I'm sure that residential realtor is great, probably a wonderful person, probably didn't mean to do anything. But Sean, knowing a little bit more of the commercial industry, could have saved this man money and so forth, where when you hone and you get very specific, you can become really good. So anything you think we should add there?
No, I think that's good, man.
Yeah. So passion, what are you passionate about? What are you the best in the world at? And really strive at that. And here's the last one. What can you make money at? You know, and we got to be careful in this conversation because money is an important thing. You know, it's all, it very much is. And so you have to be able to sustain that. But what we have found, and I think our closing quote in our meeting today is this, is that essentially profits will come once these other things are happening if you're doing them well. And so, you know, I want to make sure that, you know, we're not indicating by any means that money's not important, but at the same time, like, realize that this part seems to be a fruit of the other two in my mind. It seems to be something that will come, but you'd have to work at it. You know, it's always just a given. So what drives your economic engine? So go ahead, take it.
Yeah, I'm just going to really and truly, this piece, in my opinion, is what differentiates a business from a hobby, right? This piece here. Yeah. If you're really, really passionate about something, and even if you're the best in the world at it, you can't make any money. Again, you got a hobby, right? You have something you really enjoy doing, and that's great. But if you can't make money, again, you don't have a business. I do like what you're saying there, and I do agree that when you are passionate about something, you're the best in the world at it. From a monetary standpoint, seems like those things will eventually come. But I would caution somebody if they're doing something and absolutely, if they're in a business in particular and there's no profits coming from that, you definitely want to kind of take a closer look at what it is you're doing, because there may be, maybe you need to raise, your rates, you have individuals out there, maybe they're quoting, giving quotes out there in whatever industry, and maybe they're under quoting, their competitors. And so they're getting all the jobs, but they're just absolutely slammed with business all the time. And they're just barely staying above, above water. Hey, that would be an area where you say, okay, well, something's amiss here. Maybe I need to take a look at what I'm charging at my rates. So that would be a way that you could use this practically, speaking. From my standpoint, obviously, I charge a percentage. It's a contingent fee that I charge of any past due benefits that I'm able to help my veteran clients receive. And ultimately, what ends up happening is there's other attorneys out there that charge significantly more than me. However, what I charge is absolutely sufficient. I appreciate what our veterans have done for our country, and for that reason, again, I have no intention of raising my rates above where they are now. So anyway, and again, make a very, very good living.
Yeah, when you're looking at the book in particular, I think they highlight 11 companies, or maybe. There's a couple companies here, but let me pick one in particular because I've already mentioned them. It's Walgreens.
Yeah.
They saw that they can not only be a drugstore, but also a convenience store. And so they have this passion to be this place. Then they have the passion to be this convenience store. They have this drive to do that. So now they're going to push for that. And then what's happening is once they see that, they're clear at that, they become the best at that, then they start honing in on, okay, what is the best spot possible for us to be? And the reality then is what? The profits came, you know? And you're dead on that, we got to be careful in this statement, because if you're just doing this, you're passionate and all this, but you're not making money, it's a hobby. You're dead on. So realize that money, this is coming from a guy who works in the nonprofit world. There's an importance to it. We got to have this. We got to keep this going. And so you have to be able to tie in that passion to what? Okay, how is this going to drive it economically? So I'm going to share one anecdotal for us in this. It's that I know, so we work really hard to make our stores profitable, very hard. And it's an interesting business. I'm in used goods. You know, we're dealing with all different kinds of merchandise. But what we've learned is this: if we get really good at doing that, then what? We get to take care of people. And so we talk about that all the time. Our passion is to care for the men and women that we get to serve. But for that passion to really be played out, we've got to be really good at doing for us a thrift component. So, you know, however that encourages you, however that challenges you, let it be. But again, let me just recap these three circles. You have three things: find what you're very passionate about, find what you can be the best in the world at, and then find what drives your economic engine. So I appreciate this. Chris, any final comments before you close this out?
No, man. I know, just moving forward, one of the things that you and I are likely to do is kind of spend a little bit more time in this book. So we'll probably have several different episodes kind of talking about some of these concepts, because again, I think they are super, super valuable. We definitely encourage you to, if you haven't read the book, get the book. Again, you can listen to the book, on different apps and things. Definitely get out there, listen to it. Again, lifelong learning, continue to do what you can to better yourself and to continue to improve day in, day out.
Yeah, that's good. Let me add one thing and I'll close us there. You made a really good point, where you and I are not we're not the end all in this concept. We're reading it. We've synthesized it for ourselves. So I just really encourage everybody, go read it. And then secondarily with that, as we do episodes from this book, if you've got something, especially in our group, you're like, man, I'd like to talk about this concept within the book, or hey, I'd like to follow up with this concept, that'd be great. We would love that dialogue, because that would be really good. So thank you guys so much. We really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Winning Edge Podcast. Appreciate it, Andrew.
Yep.
Thanks for listening to the Winning Edge Podcast. Please be sure to check out the show notes for contact information for each of our guests, links to their websites, and links to more information about the topics discussed in this episode. Until next week, happy networking!